is Mike Dolce.
Ian McCall. Jan Little Evil Pulver.
The Crippler Chris Levin. And you're listening to
Talking Brawls.
We are back. Hello and welcome to Talking Brawls, Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Niall McGrath, alongside me, Mark Moriarty. What's going on, Mark?
I'm fantastic, Niall. How in God's name are you?
Oh, I'm not too bad, not too bad. I had better days, but
yeah,
not
we
too
said
bad.
We're all both a bit worse for wear. We've been working hard doing interviews, making MMA money, you know, and whatever.
Big time, whatever, Mark. All right. Obviously, you're coming off a great weekend in Mixed Martial Arts with Cage Warriors 50 in Glasgow last weekend and UFC on FX, or UFC on Fox 5 in Seattle.
Crazy. So,
yeah, absolutely fantastic stuff at the weekend. We really enjoyed the weekend of Mixed Martial Arts. And obviously on the show today, we'll fill you in who we have on. Speaking of cards, there's two bumper cards this weekend, UFC on FX 5 and 6, which are the TUF finales. Obviously starting off with the smashes on Friday night. We have Bradley Scott, who goes up against Robert Whittaker for the series finale in Australia, in Gold Coast, over in Australia. Also on the show today, we have, speaking of the TUF finale, the American TUF finale is on Saturday night, and we caught up with Shane Del Rosario, who goes up against Pat HD Barry on Saturday night. And also on that card is Melvin the Young Assassin Guillard, who goes up against Jamie Varner. And Melvin stopped by earlier on to talk about his fight and just a bit
everything.
Of general things about his
golf.
Life and a bit of golf. Yeah, he's good. He's newfound relationship with Ricky Fowler, which is a bit of a surprising relationship. But you can check out his Twitter page, and there's pictures of Rick and himself there. So also on the show, before I nearly forget, Mark, we also caught up with Chad the Savage George, who is obviously, we've had Chad on the show before, and he talked about the recent success that Occupation Fighter has had on Netflix.
How many weeks? It's about a million and
a week and a half, which is incredible. But obviously, you know, we love this documentary. We've said it many times before. Absolutely fantastic. As I mentioned during the interview with Chad last night.
And he's also breaking some big news about
what's going to
be going on in his career.
He does, exactly. Yeah, he broke some big news with us, and he's going to be going under.
Don't say break the news before.
Okay, we won't.
Jesus,
check
Christ.
Out the interview and listen to it. Then you'll find it.
You can't fast forward.
The news.
I'm not even going to tell you when it is.
Okay, yeah. And also on the show, the good folk at Cage Warriors were great to hook us up with a pair of tickets for a Cage Warriors 51 in Dublin on New Year's Eve. Obviously, that card is massive card announced yesterday, that Chris Fields will be on up against Jesse Taylor, defending his middleweight title for the first time. And obviously, we have Connor going up against Ivan Bushinger. For he could be a two belt champion, first time in Cage Warriors history if he wins. Simultaneously holds two belts at two different weight classes, which is
he's going to be the star of the show there on the night. But everyone, the top
and
stars,
Ash
Daly's
in action as well. Yeah, they're all Irish top stars. Roddy, obviously fantastic fight last weekend. He's fighting again on the card. So and obviously we fill him up, Peter, on the prelims as well. And to be in with a chance of winning the fantastic prize, the two tickets, obviously, for Cage Warriors, all you guys have to do is follow us on Talking Brawls, and you have to hashtag Talking Brawls CWFC51. We'll put up a tweet tomorrow as well, and you guys just have to retweet that to be in with a chance of winning. Simple as that, guys, so get involved, because it's sure to be one of the cards of the year in Europe. Can't wait for it, and obviously it's going to be live on MMAJunkie.com as well.
Yeah, it's going to be insane.
So, Mark, obviously, we'll have a little natter about the weekend's action.
What a card.
Fantastic card, actually.
Part of the year, really, but...
Yeah, well, I thought the prelims was... The main card wasn't as good as, I think, people made it out to be.
It was still good
but
to be on
the prelims
for a Fox
were
card.
Awesome.
For a Fox card,
top to bottom, the prelims were awesome. Absolutely great stuff. And I think we'll talk about the prelims first. Obviously, our buddy Johnny Albert against Scott Jorgensen, which was given the fight of the night honours, and also Scott Jorgensen received sub of the night. So Scott walked away with 130 grand in bonuses from the fight, and it was good to hear that John obviously gets 65k as well, which is great for him. Yeah. Obviously, he's going to be pissed off because he tapped just right, like literally on point the buzzer. Point three, really tough break for John again, because he's fought so well in all his UFC fights. He's been one of the most exciting guys. And another podcast I was listening to the other day, and it was the Beatdown with Sherdog Radio Networks. You know, the guys were saying there, like, that John is a seriously talented fighter, and he's, you know, he is. He's a great guy to watch. He's so exciting fighter. And I was pretty pissed off. I was pretty bit gutted, because we built up a decent relationship with John. He's a good dude, you know. You don't let see, you know, good guys got lose in that sort of manner, because it was a great fight, and I advise everyone to watch it. And also, you know, we had Darren Cruikshank with a great win against Henry Martinez, and you know what a head kick, unbelievable. That didn't get knocked out of the night. I was a bit surprised that it didn't.
But it's the hard thing. It's almost like they went for the MMA purist,
Eve Edwards
pick for fight of the night, in the sense that John Albert versus Jorgensen was a ground display, ground control, and just such unbelievable submission.
Yeah, what I saw was back and forth and rolling around the ground.
Whereas Cruikshank was just that head kick. That's knockout of the year.
That was one of my rounds. The first round was round of the year in my book. It was,
and remember. When he
came out of the block slowly, Cruikshank, but then he got into it, and that just boom, what a head kick.
Yeah,
down. Martinez out. He knew the minute he kicked him, he was out.
I heard him talking after the fight. He was saying, he was talking about it in his style, which he uses, where he just gets so many kicks to the body until he drops his head, and he knows, he knew, because it's the way he put his hands up in the air.
He didn't need to go in
for a follow-up shot or anything. And he just said, he didn't need it. He knew he was out. And as a fighter, he had that instinct in him that he knew, that right shot to the head.
It was between the shin and leading onto your foot where you caught him just crisply in the head. Awesome. But it didn't even get fired. I'm sure, you know, the UFC gave him some sort of bonuses, the bonuses we don't hear about. But they gave that bonus a fight of the night to Eve Edwards, who knocked out Jeremy Stephens, who was knocked out for the first time. And it was I didn't expect that to end the way it did. And there was another fantastic fight, and fair play to Eve. Eve is obviously a veteran of the sport, and I'm sure Jeremy gonna be pretty pissed off after you know getting knocked out for the first time in his career.
So many of those guys on that card. That was
Henry Martinez
was like Maldonado, just take a beating and then just had that face on him that he could do it. And when it was Eve Edwards, Jeremy Stephens, was that the top of the
top
FX
of the prelims
card?
Yeah, top of the FX card. Yeah.
Oh, just unbelievable. But both guys came out. And Eve Edwards, is he 39 now, or is he
39?
He must be coming towards the end. And Jeremy Stephens just couldn't live up to it. Like, you know,
it was quick counter knockout, a few digs in the on the ground, and you know, waved off, and incredible stuff. But also we saw the debut of Abel Trujillo against Marcus Levasseur, which was, you know, oh my god, I think we could have unleashed a star here. And Abel Trujillo, fantastic, just what a beast of a man, what a frame on him, and you know, for a lightweight.
He beat Tim Means in the sauna, first of all, you know.
Yeah,
and then took out Levasseur.
Yeah, and it was an incredibly impressive performance in your debut. And, you know, a lot of people were just going, ooh, when he won that fight. It was, and Marcus Levasseur is a tough dude as well, you know. Like, he hung in there, and it was good to see, you know, more. You're 155ers, as if we need any more.
As always, props to someone for stepping in and being willing.
Of course,
to take
late notice. So you know, fair fucks to Trujillo.
These guys must be just. You must have
a Black Zillion fighter.
Black Zillion, these guys must be just staying at weight all the time and just waiting to jump in, because there's so many fighters.
Well, I think you sort of have to do that now if you're not in the UFC. You have to, you know, and if you're a top level fighter, you have to just keep, you know.
Keep your ear to the ground and keep around the weight,
and you know, if you get a call like that, you'll have to take it, you know. So fair play to him.
Our picks were
a little shit,
a little tasty, but we did have one thing right. Our boy Matty Brown, the
took
immortal.
It down.
He did it! Oh, what an impressive display!
And just sorry, before we move on to that, we just mentioned Nam Phan and Dennis Seaver.
Man.
And another thing I'd like to get off my... Man, the fucking judging. Holy shit. What is wrong with these judges? They're giving these 10-8 rounds out like hotcakes.
Was it two 10-8s?
Yeah, two 10-8s. One of the judges saw that. Like, hey, what are you looking at, you twat?
Do you know what it is?
Three 10-8s. So what was it, 50?
You know, it was one of the most...
it was fucking
But
bananas.
Do you know what it's like? It seemed to be one of those situations. You know when you're in school and you're cheating on a test? The kid's just looking to the other side of you and seeing what the other guy has written. And he just... How could three 10-8s exist in that fight? Because now... Nam was
He was blocking everything. He was never in trouble.
He wasn't being killed. He was being defensive. He couldn't get anything in himself, yeah, offense-wise, but that doesn't mean he was being killed. 3-10-8 means the fight should have been stopped.
Yeah, it was a joke. Like, Nam was defending everything sensibly. There was never a 10-8 round. Maybe one of them, actually,
yeah,
in fairness.
Yeah, fair, second,
I think it was. Might have been a 10-8 where a Seaver took him to the ground. But
I was hiding behind my hands. I didn't want to see him. He was taking a pounding, but he was taking a... He was still... He wasn't,
but it
being,
wasn't, the,
he wasn't being hurt physically.
Even in the Diaz fight later on the card, like, what did the judges score that? 2-10-8 rounds. There was never fucking 2-10-8 rounds. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know, man. It's just...
Well, Dennis Seaver, we can say, wondering, he's a beast. Like, you know, that guy is... he came in pretty...
Yeah, he looked good. He's...
Nam looked a bit... Like, he wasn't...
Nam took it on short notice.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But
like,
listen, Dennis is obviously second fight of featherweight now, so Dennis isn't too far off a title shot. If he... One more win and he gets a title shot at 145, I think.
You put a bit of trash talk in Dennis, and is he Russian or German?
He's Russian-German. Yeah, he's Russian-German. I think he was born in Russia and moved to Germany. Like, he doesn't speak good English.
He's a monster. Those kicks...
What impressed me about Dennis was the combinations he's putting together as well. It was, you know, mixed it up really well with the kicks, inside leg kicks, then moving up, you know, to the midsection, up to the head, things like that. And it was very impressive. Very
and
impressive.
It's one of those things as well, because you kind of know what he's going to do.
Yeah.
But you can't really telegraph
it. Exactly. Yeah. So, it was an awesome card. The prelims, got really excited about the prelims. And you know, they did come. The only bad fight in the card, I think, was Mike Easton.
It just happens, doesn't it?
Yeah, doesn't another disappointing, you know, loss from Mike Easton. But fair play to Aston Sow for getting the victory with a broken arm, I believe, as well.
Jesus.
So he will be out for quite some time. But moving on to the main card, obviously, we talked about Matt Brown. We called it on the show.
Our only call, right?
Matt's a good dude. We had him on the show, obviously, a couple of weeks ago as well. So we were pretty happy with our call there. And what a performance. This guy, you know, I heard it during the week. There was talk of Bendo to be fight of the year, and I can't really understand that one, because, you know, a guy who he is a great fighter, don't get me wrong, but like, he lost those two fights to Frankie
Kuhner.
I don't know how you can be fighter of the year when you
I'm doing theme music for Niles Frankie Edgar Corner now every week, where I get
I'll be cornering the boy from Tom's River, New Jersey, very soon. But you know, Matt Brown, fighter of the year for me. That's
four. Well, it's four wins. You know, you can't say anything clearer than that.
Yeah, four wins
against good guys
in a calendar year as well. Yeah. Which is, you know, what a performance though. It was a really, really good performance. He just mixed everything up. His jiu-jitsu was awesome. You know, he nearly choked him out. He had a couple of triangles in the ground, and he just mixed it up so well. And like, what a combo to finish it off! Left, right, bang. Mike Swick was out.
We spoke to him. We kind of said our predictions and everything. And I don't, like, we thought he was going to win, but we didn't. No one thought he was going to do sort of a display of all round martial arts.
Decision, I think we both had.
And yeah, and no one thought that he was. We thought he was going to go out there and brawl and just be Matt Brown of old, you know, kind of just brawl and punch him to death. But Jesus Christ, he did brain him in the end.
Yeah.
Christ Almighty, that was some good martial arts on the ground. And who would have suspected a submission attempt from Matt Brown? That's not how Matt Brown finishes fights. That's not what happens. But I think people got a bit nostalgic about Mike Swick. Everyone was a bit they were rooting for him, and they wanted to see the Mike Quick Swick of old, and it just wasn't coming. Like, that wasn't going to happen. And he was coming against a vet and a guy who knows how to knock people out.
Yeah.
And that's 4 KOs this year, 4 stoppages.
Fair play to Matt Brown, fantastic performance from him. And moving on on the card, obviously we saw
we did pick Rory, actually, in fairness.
Yeah, but...
We didn't want him to win,
but, you know, Rory McDonald, as we'll talk about, and destroyed BJ Penn, I think, is a pretty fair word, comprehensive beating he dished out on the legend that is BJ Penn, the prodigy, as Mike Goldberg said. It was, you know, I think BJ has to take a look now. He shouldn't be fighting guys at 170. BJ needs to step to one back. If he's going to stay around, he needs to drop back down to 155. And there is still fights from at 155. You know, there's still guys he'd definitely beat at 155. Obviously, it's up to BJ whether he does that or not. But, you know, it was McDonald's. It was his best performance I've seen him in the UFC so far. Obviously, last time Eddie beat Che Mills as well, very impressively. And he just mixed everything up so well. His elbows, obviously, huge asset. You know, inside leg kicks. His boxing was good. He is the all-round modern-day mixed martial artist. He trains mixed martial arts.
He's built like a brick shit house.
He looked like a heavyweight. It looked like a heavyweight against you know, a flyweight. The size difference of the two guys on Saturday night.
You can say martial arts is about the little guy beating the big guy, but you know, sometimes athletes come into it bigger.
He looked like Inspector Gadget when he arrived at the Key Arena.
If you're not going to be loved and liked by a crowd, be hated like that.
Yeah, I didn't like the dancing around. I have to say, I thought it was disrespectful.
Yeah, I think the coaches were saying that's a technique.
No, it's bullshit.
Still,
he was being cocky.
Yeah, it's a shuffle.
And then he comes out and calls out Carlos Condit at the end. He's beaten Carlos has beaten him before.
Yeah,
I'd like to see it again. Yeah, I would like to see it.
Usually the matchmakers like to put winners against winners and losers against losers. And do you think Condit, like, that's not a nice fight for Condit?
Well, not for
like,
Diaz is getting a fight, isn't he?
Oh well, that's almost the Nick Diaz fans will make that. I'm not insulting Nick Diaz in this again. I'm not stupid. But no, it's not a fight I think Condit would necessarily lose. But it's a hard fight for Condit coming back. You'd think they'd kind of hand him a nicer fight, you know,
it's going to be interesting
easier
to see.
Fight technically.
Yeah, I'm sure Carlos will accept
money.
It, but you know, I think Carlos is in
Carlos the headline is, of card technically.
Carlos, oh yeah, of course it could. Carlos is up there now where, you know,
what's his way back? He needs to fight a big guy.
Yeah, it is. All his fights are going to be big guys because he's a top contender still.
Yeah, and I suppose Rory's
Carlos get another shot at GSP. I think.
What do you do at Rory?
Well, he doesn't want to fight GSP.
That's
so.
What I mean. Like, what do you do until GSP retires? Like,
well, I'm sure Rory can move up to middleweight.
That's true. He could, couldn't he?
He easily looks big enough, but you know, are you going to get a shot at middleweight as well? There's so many tough guys in the division. He'd have to have tier 3 fights at middleweight.
He's such a dickhead, though, isn't he? He really is. He just has that. He has that. He looks like a psychopath. He's just
the Canadian psychos they're calling. But listen, we won't dwell long on this too much. We'll move on to Shogun. Got picked apart by Alexander the Mauler Gustafsson, and Alexander has clearly put his name in the title picture now, and you know, probably will take one more fight before facing the light heavyweight champion Chael Sonnen. John Jones.
John Jones. Yeah. Once no one gets injured in the Chael and John Jones.
But obviously, you know, I just.
He did.
What about Shogun, man? Is it time for Shogun to pack it in?
He's the oldest 31-year-old
I've
ever seen.
He just looks tired and beaten up. And you know, the thing about Shogun, I thought his movement, he looked so static.
He did have the Victor Belfort moment when he got the leg lock, which was quite exciting.
It was exciting, but there was no movement. He just looked a tired man,
It's slow motion. It's slow motion.
He just looked beaten up and I was very disappointed with his performance, I have to say.
No one has been through more, like, even if he had an easy fight, I think he'd turn it into a war and make it hard for himself. Like, he doesn't know how to make a fight easy for himself, and I think he picks tough fights for himself. He's had so many wars. He's the oldest 31-year-old in the world, and, like, I think he's just going to, they're going to put him in exciting standing ground. Like, they're going to put him with Matt Brown-alikes, you know, kind of people who can brawl with them and people will, you know, who will just have a punch off of him. Chuck him with Hendo again after.
It's going to be an interesting one, but, you know, Gustafsson, you know, picked him apart all evening. It was never in doubt.
What do you think of Alex?
Did that wrong again, but,
What do you think of Alex now? He's like.
He is, no, he's good, but it's.
Do you think people just
I don't think he beat John Jones.
Well, that's the thing. People just go because his range and the fact that he has that reach.
It's an interesting stylistic matchup. Yeah. It is. Yeah, definitely. But
I don't think his abilities are at John Jones's level yet. But people go just.
No, he's evolving. He's getting better the whole time. Fair play to him. And I think he does deserve a title shot now. 7 on the bounce. So, listen, what more can you do?
Yeah, damn right.
Okay, moving on. Main event of the evening, Benson, Toothpick Henderson.
I was about to say that as well. Right?
defeated Nate Diaz to retain his lightweight title. Nate, I was quite disappointed with Nate's performance. I have to say, I expected more. I know he did say he injured his eye early on, got a punch straight to the eye from Benson, and he said he couldn't see after the first round. Maybe that had something to do with it, but it was just never really in doubt. Benson picked him apart. Fair play to Benson.
Some Diaz fans on Twitter have been saying it could have.
Yeah, well, listen, these guys need to get their fucking eyes checked because it's bullshit. He clearly won the fight five rounds to zero. So, you know.
There's no rhyme there.
The only thing Nate tried doing all evening that worked, that it didn't even work. Sorry, you know, he tried grabbing a submission when he was on his back, once or twice. Got, you know, a possible heel hook at one stage. I think it was in the second, but he never looked like winning the fight. And we never saw any of his boxing or anything, but he did. It looked, Benson looked like a light heavyweight against a flyweight. Again, the size difference was massive.
Well, we'll see. He was built like a running back.
A running back, yeah. And Mike Goldberg apparently does pre-season games for the Arizona Cardinals. And
Jesus.
You know what size a running back is, Mike. He's not nowhere near the size of fucking...
He has the shit on the cuff. He's a robot.
I have to say Joe Rogan was awesome. I thought his commentary very descriptive for the mainstream audience. It's a complete different style of commentary when he's on
the times when he just gets it right, isn't it? When actually he did it really well for Cruikshank as well, where he was talking about how he's hitting the body shots like, you know, telegraphing him to drop his hands and go for the head kick. And he just, sometimes Rogan is just on fire and he gets the techniques across to people, because it's different style of commentary.
I think they should let me
and
you
cards.
Do the FX cards.
It'd so be perfect. Yeah,
Dana White, come Dana. We'll come do the FX cards.
You need for the Ireland card 2013.
You need your Irish person on, like Paddy, what's his name, on ESPN for the football in the States.
I can't remember his
Paddy,
name.
Paddy, what's his face? Everyone hates
him. America tweeted.
Okay, guys.
But Bendo was one of those people now. How do you think he's come out of that now? Is he Fighter of the Year in your book?
No, I mentioned my Fighter of the Year, Matt Brown.
Yeah.
So, no, listen, I don't know how you can give Benson Henderson Fighter of the Year. I don't care. People seem to forget what happened in the two Frankie Edgar fights.
Frankie's gonna...
Listen, and obviously we've this weekend we've
crazy weekend,
possibly the best, one of the best smashes, best TUF series ever. I thought was the smashes, really entertaining stuff. And we obviously have it's a fucking good card over there. It's Colin Fletcher versus Norman Parks. Norman, who is from Northern Ireland, Colin is a Geordie boy from Newcastle. Yeah. They're squaring up. They're good mates as well.
Yeah.
We're very close in the show. They're squaring up this Friday night in Australia for the lightweight
tough championship.
Yeah. So that's
so many tough winners now. It's hard to remember.
And obviously, we caught up with Bradley Scott, who will be facing up against Robert Whittaker.
He was climbing on the plane, I think, as we spoke to him.
Yeah, more or less, he was. So that's a really exciting fight. Your man Robert Whittaker looks like a beast, man. I was really impressed with him. He's the most impressive fighter I've seen on the show.
He talked about beating the Palms a lot, didn't he?
Along with Norman Parks. And obviously Chad Mendes is on that card. But obviously Ross Pearson and George Sotiropoulos in the main card. So looking forward to that one as well. And who do you fancy in that fight, Mark?
I think Ross Pearson. I like Ross's style. They really actually had a good chemistry on the show.
They didn't like each other at all.
They really like George.
A lot of people don't like George.
George is a narky little bastard.
As Bradley says, he doesn't have much of a personality. Really, is the bottom line.
Which technically works in a TV show almost, doesn't it? Because they really kind of got at each other. George
they
was
did.
A
full stop. But I can see this fight going Pearson's way as well. I could see a knockout. Second round TKO Ross Pearson.
Who are you thinking for the Colin Fletcher versus Norman for the freak show versus
tough.
The Nordy boy?
I think Norman will have problems with his reach and
length,
because he's a massive lightweight. Is
and Colin? Did you see
Colin Fletcher? But I think Norman. Ross said on the show that Norman is a UFC level fighter already.
Yeah.
So obviously they both signed contracts already with the UFC, but I do fancy Norman to take that one down. I don't know why. I just think he just looks technical.
The
flailing
limbs,
better.
He might be able to grab something
and possibly get on top of him. I'm not sure.
I was surprised at Freak Show's his jits was that good, and that he actually has. He's a very technical fighter. Like, I was expecting him to be more of a standing on the outside in a kind of Gustafsson way and chucking in.
He's good. He's a good technical kickboxer. Yeah. And these guys, it is going to be a close one. I can see this one going on all three rounds, actually, to be honest with you, but I do fancy Norman to get a decision victory.
Yeah, that's good. I think I'm going to go Norman as well. He's just an experienced fighter. Yeah. He's been on the scene much longer.
Before we bore you to death any longer,
we'll go to Brad.
Yeah, we'll go to Brad. We caught up with Bradley Scott.
Lovely
during the week. Lovely guy. We caught up with Bradley Scott, and this is what he had to say. Check it out, guys. We'll be back in a few minutes. Cheers.
This is John Albert from the UFC, and you've been listening to Talking Brawls.
Delighted to say we're joined on the line by Brad Scott, who goes up against Robert Whittaker in the TUF Smashes finale Friday night, the Gold Coast in Australia. Brad, first of all, thanks a million for coming on, and how's everything going with you, mate? Keeping well?
Yeah, everything's going pretty well now. I'm down into the last week of the weight cut, which is obviously, as every fighter knows, the worst part. So I'm just counting down on the calories and preparing myself for the flight.
Good stuff, good stuff. When are you heading off? Tomorrow, is it?
Yeah, tomorrow night I'm heading off.
Okay, Brent. How's camp been going for you, and what have you been working on? Obviously, we know a lot about Robert as well. He's obviously on the show. So what have you been working ahead of the fight?
Well, really, I prefer to try and be a complete martial artist as much as possible. So instead of working for a specific game plan, I've sort of been training everything, really, trying to improve in all areas so I can sort of prolong my career and not just... Yeah. Jumpstart in each department.
Yeah, Brad, what's it been like to have so much time since the filming of the show to get your camp ready? You were in such close proximity with Whittaker on the show. To come out of the house and then prepare for the fight, what's it like, and to keep shtum on what happened on the show at the same time?
That is difficult, because obviously you're coming out of a game plan to beat the person, but you're not able to tell anyone the person you're beating. So you've got to try and get all your sparring partners to emulate what he does. So. You have to keep it a secret, but there's a limit. They sort of cotton on who you're fighting and how you've got on just by training without even opening your mouth. But it's all, it's just difficult. But now it's out in the open, everyone knows.
Yeah. How many people in the inner circle and the gym and like the coaches, how many people would have known what went on? How many people would you have close enough to you would have known what happened?
Just coaches in... family, really.
Cool.
Maybe best friends, but that's it. No one else knew. Everyone else, I just made them wait. They all wanted to watch it anyway, so even if I did tell them, they still would have watched it.
And how tough was it being on the show? Obviously, we saw the ups and downs, but with you guys, it was a very eventful show, this series. How hard was it actually being on the spotlight with the cameras on you, and how different a preparation, obviously, to fights was that, and did it put you off in any way, gearing up towards your fights?
I ain't gonna lie to you, I sort of... you sort of forget the cameras there after about a week, and after that it was just the pressure of knowing that you had to win to stay in, so that was pretty much the only pressure you were under, and I saw myself as a bit of an underdog when I first went in there anyway.
Yeah.
So and wasn't really under that much pressure.
Brad, what's it like to have pretty much you get up, you eat, you train, and your life just revolves around fighting when you're in that house? Is it a good thing that you have everything taken care of, and all you have to focus on in training, or is it hard to focus without the real world around you at the same time?
That's a good question, actually. I think a lot of it is just trying to relax. It's hard to relax when you're surrounded by just fighting all the time.
Yeah.
Whereas normally you can get away in the real world where you're not allowed to just fight all the time, and I'm more relaxed now than what I was in the house.
And obviously working with Ross Pearson as well, he's a huge UK name. Obviously he's he's won the show in the past. How good was it to work with Ross and the coaches? Did you learn a lot off the guys?
Ross himself was absolutely nails, and a lot of it's mental with Ross. He's as a fighter, his technical ability, there's no question. But people don't understand how mentally tough he is, so it's good to get a bit of that rub off on you, and use that in your fighting style, and basically never give up. And some of the drills you've got us doing, shark tanks, those sprints are obviously horrific.
Yeah.
Pretty much, trained you mentally as well as physically.
Did you see, Brad, a leap in the standard of fighters you were going over there, coming from Cage Warriors and fighting over in Europe? Do you see a leap now with the fighters that you're seeing in the Tough House? Did you see a leap in the style of fighters and the experience?
Yeah, I was really impressed by Bowler and Luke. I was really impressed by the fact that they could wrestle.
Yeah.
I mean, I had just started wrestling, but they were pretty good at wrestling. They were far, far superior to me. So it was weird going in there, and all of a sudden I felt like I was the worst welterweight, and I was like, oh, I've got so much to do and so much to learn, and I just felt like I didn't, belong or didn't deserve to be there at one point.
You put your head down. You're one of the few guys, I think, there, you sort of put your head down. As we watch the show, I would have said you were one of the more level-headed guys. You reckon you'd a sort of a mental advantage on the other guys in the house, because some of them sort of lost their way a little bit?
I think the ones that lost their way was just boredom. I mean, it was horrible. After a couple of weeks, there's nothing to talk about, there's nothing to do anymore, you're just insanely bored, and it was just, oh, just
yeah. I only imagine.
Training was anything you look forward to.
Is the training of a different caliber to what you were used to? Is that kind of going in and training with everyone else? Is it a motivation to watch everyone else doing the same training, or what's it like to be away from your usual camp and your usual regime?
That's another good question. It's a total different format. It's hard to explain. I mean, training is not just training. Everybody trains differently, and that was not the way I'd normally trained.
Mm.
It was a different way of training. Normally, it's more focused around me personally when I train here. Over there, obviously, it was a team session. But it was good to see how everyone else fared in different areas. I mean, like, for being well-rounded, Luke Newman was probably the most well-rounded player we had.
Did you see it was a benefit to you to be taken out of almost a comfort zone of your own gym and your own surroundings? Is that, because a lot of people go away for camps and that, is it actually helpful for you to be, especially going to a nice climate like Australia for it as well?
Yeah, even though it was winter in Australia, it was most of our summer.
Still a lot warmer.
It was, I think the being at your comfort zone is the most important bit. I mean, I was constantly put under new sorts of pressure, people doing, you know, moves I wasn't used to because my training partners do the same shit every day, and it was you know, different, you know, people doing different moves and different styles of wrestling, very aggressive hands. It was good. It was really good.
And how impressed were you with the? I was very impressed watching the show, with especially Team UK's team spirit. You guys seem to bond a lot better than the Australian guys, and it was nearly a whitewash the show. Obviously, it could have been all British in two of the finals. The Aussies seemed a little bit disjointed. Do you think that's something to do with George's personality?
Yeah, he's not exactly the most. He hasn't really got much of a sense of humour in that.
Yeah.
he's a bit of a boring sod in that aspect. Gets on my nerves a little bit. He's a little bit. Took about 20 seconds to get on with everyone else.
Yeah.
I don't know, they just seemed a little bit shy. But otherwise, they were just... I really got along with them towards the end, after all the fights and that. Got along with everyone, including Rob.
Yeah, it seemed that everyone seemed to sort of gel in the last few weeks of the show. We'll stick with Rob. How good? He's been one of the really impressive guys in the house. How tough is this fight going to be for you?
My hardest fight, without a doubt. It's going to be my hardest fight. I have fought opponents similar to Rob before, like power output and speed before, and I've dealt with them quite well. So hopefully, and I have a few sparring partners that are similar to him, and I've managed to break him down and beat him in the past. I'm hoping to do the same thing this time.
Yeah, did you find it odd to be on? Obviously, you didn't actually have to fight a Brit in the end, but is it weird to be on, have this kind of, the element of teams? When you could well just have to come up against your opponent at the end of the day. That close proximity, it's an individual sport and versus the teams. It's always a weird kind of trade-off of the show. How do you feel about the allegiance to your team, yet you could have to beat your man in the cage next to you?
Yeah, although it was Team UK versus Team Oz, in reality, you're doing it for yourself.
Definitely.
There's no ifs or buts. Obviously, if one of your teammates is fighting an Australian, you're backing him 100%, but then it becomes awkward when you've got two teammates fighting each other. And there was a couple of funny incidents where, for instance, Colin, Norman, Mike,
right,
and all
yeah.
that would all be doing their sprints, and Ross would shout out something, oh, remember, your opponent's not doing this. And it's like, well, I'll actually. He stood next to me on the treadmill doing exactly the same. So there you are. I pretty much answered the question for you there.
Yeah.
I mean, it is, at the end of the day, fighting is a one-man sport.
That's it.
Brad, what didn't get in the show? What did they not put on that we should have seen on the show?
You know I'm not allowed to answer that.
It's always worth to try and try.
I'm not allowed to answer that for 3 years. It's definitely worth finding out if you can.
The extras DVD when it comes out.
I don't know if it's even going to be on DVD. But it'd be worth it if it was.
So we'll stick with the fight next week. Out there, how much weight do you have to cut, like, once you get there, obviously with the plane?
What, left?
Yeah.
I have 20 pounds left now.
You've 20 pounds left. And
oh, thank God for that, innit? I done that in 2 days last time. Jesus Christ.
Will you gain weight on the flight as well? Guys often say you might put on a few pounds during the flight as well, like water retention, things like that. Are you taking that into consideration?
It comes off in a couple of days, innit? They're just using that as an excuse. Yeah. It comes off in like 2 days, three days. You can use, and it's only literally a couple of pounds.
Yeah.
And don't eat the plane food.
Yeah.
That's
you
it.
You can use natural diuretics that won't cause damage to dandelion root, apple cider vinegar, things like that, to draw that straight back out of you.
And so, have you any family going over with you at all, or any girlfriends and things like that? Or
yeah, my girlfriend and my mum flew out a minute ago. We just got back from dropping them off.
All right. Certainly. Okay, brilliant. So you've a few people out there with you. Anyway, so tell us, what's the outcome going to be next Friday night at UFC on FX6 on the Gold Coast? What's going to happen with you, and are you going to take the smashes, and are you going to win it?
I can't guarantee anything, so don't go putting your bets down. But I'm hoping for a bullion. I want to beat him up, and basically what I've done to Ben Alloway, but not a fat, sluggish version, but a faster version. Basically how I performed against X-Man with more standing, basically. If you can sort of pick and match that.
What's the feeling this far out, so close to the fight? Is it excitement? Is it nerves? Is it just want to get the weight cut over with? Just weigh in? Or how do you feel?
Yeah, it's always the weight cut at this moment in time that gets my tits. I know I've got to do it, and it's like, oh. I mean, I know I can do it. It's just like, why do I have to prove it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So turn up at 90 kilos and goes, I could have made weight yesterday.
Yeah, well, Brad, we
didn't shake hands on it. That's how it works, is it?
Yeah, well, we saw you in the last episode of Tough there, finishing off all the food in the house there, so this was all...
I had, like, cheesecake for fun. I must have had 15, 16 cheesecakes.
How much did you put on for that again?
I went up to 96 kilos in the end.
Jesus Christ.
Christ, man.
Heaviest I've ever been, so...
A lot of the guys were walking around with some pot bellies by the time they left the house. But listen, tell us one more thing. Who's going to be cornering you for the fight next weekend? Obviously, Ross won't be there because he's his own fight, obviously, the main event. So who's going to be in your corner?
Stuart Pike from Dragon's Lair.
Okay.
And Dean Amantinger.
Okay, great.
I'm now working with Dean with the Renegade Nutrition.
All right. So you get that weight off you and we'll be ready to go then next Saturday. Listen,
forces me in the hot bath.
Listen, thanks a million for joining us. Have you anyone to you'd like to plug, any sponsors or anything like that, and you can give us your Twitter handle as well for guys to follow you?
Have you got my
I have your Twitter handle Twitter here.
Is. We'll share
your Twitter handle is at BradleyScott89.
Yeah.
There we go. any sponsors you want to say thanks, or anyone else?
JY Nutrition, Smuggling Duds, they helped me out at the last minute, and G4 MMA.
Excellent stuff.
Legend, man.
Listen, mate, best of luck next weekend, and we hope everything goes great for you, and thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks very much. Cheers for that, guys.
Thanks, cheers, bro. Guys. Thanks, bud. And we are back with a new hat on my head, of my Santa hat on, getting the Christmas spirit here in headquarters. I hope you enjoyed the Brad Scott interview. Absolutely top gentleman. And that is going to be cracking. It's actually a cracking card top to bottom on Friday evening from the, I think it's
the Gold Coast
Arena Convention Centre, Events and Convention Centre in Queensland, Australia. I think it's Queensland.
Yeah, that's meant to be.
I've been there.
What's it like?
It's lovely. It's like, it's good crack. It's like down by Surfer's Paradise. And it's a real holiday sort of place. But I wouldn't mind being there, you know,
for
having
Christmas.
Cracking a few beers tomorrow before our Friday before the events would be great, but obviously that's not going to happen.
Do you think if we email the lads, they might over a few press passes and the flights and everything?
That's it, not a bother, we'll be there. No, I wish. But obviously, you know, let's check out that card. It's going to be a cracker because the season has been great. The smashes, I really, really enjoyed it.
Hector Lombard
is on that card as well. So, you know, it's a good card to have there. And obviously, the two. There's a couple of other. Manny Rodriguez is on the card as well. Who got injured during the season. He looked a top prospect. He beat Xavier Lucas, and he knocked him out in spectacular fashion. He was the sort of the leader.
Yeah,
he hurt his leg. So I think Brendan Lochnan's on that card as well.
Yeah, I think they've chucked out your man Ben Alloway.
Pushing
him a fair bit.
Yeah, I don't think Alloway's going to beat Martinez though. Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Rodriguez will beat him, and I think Brendan Lochnan is fighting. He is up against.
Oh, Brendan Lochnan. He's fighting Mike Wilkinson.
Who was also on the show, and that's going to be a good fight as well. They're two good fighters. I was very impressed with Brendan Lochnan. Actually,
he's 19.
He was the youngest ever TUF contestant.
It's fucking insane.
Ever.
It's really insane when you see people that young getting to that level. Because he came in late, didn't he? He came in midway
through the show.
He was a substitution almost. Yeah.
He was very impressive, actually. He was very impressed. But obviously, moving on, we've the Ultimate Fighter Finale 16 from Vegas on Saturday night as well. Yeah. And that is it's probably the best ever TUF card, I think. They've put together TF Finale card.
Which is Buffer on?
Buffer is on the Vegas card.
He's on the Vegas card,
yeah,
he's not in the Australia.
He can't make the Australia one, obviously, you know, it's literally impossible to get.
The Buffer app and just walk out into the
country. So they have Joe Martinez is doing WEC and Cage Warriors. Joe Martinez is doing the ring announcement.
He's got his gig for the UFC
Friday
for the
year. Yeah, so now Joe's a very good announcer. So yeah, that card is awesome. You know, there's some really good fights. Obviously, we heard the news a couple of months ago that Shane Carwin had to pull out due to injury. So Shane is going up against himself because he won't be fighting. Roy Nelson is going up against Matt Mitrione. Which is, I really like that fight. I actually like it a little bit more than the Carwin one, I have to say.
I think Carwin's career is a bit bollocks now because that's too many injuries.
Had a lot of injuries, blew his knee out. So.
And Mitrione and Roy were in the same Ultimate Fighter season.
Yeah,
they
knew each other quite well. Obviously, the press call was on yesterday. We were on that and was listening and that, and it was.
I didn't hear it actually. Was it good?
It was okay. Yeah, it wasn't bad. It was. They used to.
Who do they have on?
Pretty good friends, Matt. And,
they just had the
Roy,
two of them, did they? Yeah.
And they had
Mike Ritchie and Colton, maybe.
Mike Ritchie and Colton were both on it as well. Obviously we've Mike Ritchie and Colton on the card, and then we have Shane Del Rosario against Pat HD Barry, which we caught up with Shane last night. So we will have that interview on in a couple of minutes. That's a really interesting fight, I think, as well. Shane and obviously we talked a bit with Shane about the kickboxing element, which both of them are, you know, decorated kickboxers. Yep. So it's going to, I think that one is someone's going to get knocked the fuck out.
We've got a couple of fight of the night possibilities here, which are going to stand and bangs.
Definitely, I really like it, and obviously we've who we caught up with. Also, we have Melvin, the young assassin, Guillard against Jamie Varner. I think that's fight of the night written all over it, that one. I have to say, I think those two fights we just mentioned they're really getting sort of excited for that now, because they're going to be good wholesome scraps.
And who did Jamie Varner? It was Lowe's on last
Lowe's time, on J Lo at UFC on Fox 4. Mark Moriarty.
He's like the assassin.
Statistician.
But no, Jamie Varner is always, he stands and bangs with people, and he's not going to be one to kind of hold back. And Melvin's the same. So he's talked about it. They both. I think when they look each other in the eyes and they know the way the fight's going to bang down, and they're going to.
Melvin's one of these guys, you know, you pay money to watch fight because he always gets himself into an exciting fight. A lot like John Albert, actually, in many ways. You know, you're going to get something mad's going to happen. Obviously, last time out against Cerrone, what a fight of the night. It was UFC 143 in Denver, Colorado, I think it was, where it was Frankie Edgar and Bendo. It was that card, as far as I remember.
I think there are certain people who, wherever they go, you will pay to watch them fight, and it doesn't matter.
Definitely. And they are a great guy. But listen, we won't hang around any longer. We will go to Shane Del Rosario, who is fighting up against Pat HD Barry in Las Vegas, Nevada, at the TUF 16 finale on Saturday night. So we caught up with Shane last night, and check it out, guys. This is what we had to say. Talk to you in a few minutes. Cheers.
I'm UFC heavyweight Steve Melosic, and you listen to Talking Brawls.
Delighted to say we're joined on the line by Shane Del Rosario, who goes up against Pat Barry at UFC, the TUF finale this Saturday in Las Vegas. Shane, first of all, how are things, mate? How are you keeping?
Things have been great, you know. They gave me a call back. It's going to be a great fight against Pat Barry, so I'm excited. I think it's a great opponent, and I'm ready to go Saturday.
Shane, what have you been working on ahead of the fight, and who you've been working with, etc.?
I'm still with the same people. My coach is Colin Oyama. Mm-hmm. My jiu-jitsu coach, Jiva Santana, out in Orange County, California. Training's all been the same. One difference is that, I'm fully recovered from my car accident and I could totally run and everything now. So I feel like my cardio and everything's back to, what it used to be. Last fight, I obviously wasn't ready. I was doing a lot of different things to kind of get around my injury. And it didn't prepare me as where I needed to be.
And Shane, obviously,
so I feel really confident this time, and I'm ready to go.
And Shane, obviously, the last fight, it was your first loss as a professional mixed martial artist. How hard was that for you to deal with that? And you did very well in the first round, and it was Stipe is obviously a top heavyweight as well. Was there any psychological effect coming into this fighter?
There's nerves. Just, you know, obviously being at UFC, my first fight, and being off for that year and a half, you know, so there's a little extra nerves added to that situation. As far as the loss, you know, of course I'm bummed, you know, I'm very competitive, I always want to win, but I took it as kind of like a wake-up call and a blessing, you know, I think I need to get my ass kicked in a way to go home and work on some things and come back ready to go. Because UFC is a top organization, and you know every fight's gonna be tough from now on. So I got to make sure I'm ready, and you know I'm just honored to be here. I got to make the best of it as while I'm here.
And what sort of style do you expect? Because Pat Barry's obviously a very interesting fighter, a kickboxer, and someone who you're going to have. Like it's yourself, always going to be a good fight when you put you two guys up against each other.
Somebody's going to get knocked out this Saturday, huh? Somebody's getting knocked out.
Exactly. It's not going to be two point getters and hoping to finish by decision. How do you feel an excitement to prove to the USC fans what Shane Del Rosario can actually do on the big stage?
It should be a kickboxing fight as well.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be an exciting fight. You know, we're obviously both kickboxers. We're both heavyweights. So, I mean, if someone connects, I'm sure they're going to get dropped. You know, and he's a very dangerous opponent. So I got to be smart. I got to keep my hands up and move, you know. But I think being the part that we're both kickboxing, it's going to help us both kind of relax and know what we're getting into, you know, and not worry so much about takedowns and you know, kind of go at it on our feet. It's going to make for an exciting fight for everyone watching.
And you've just got into Vegas now. How's the traveling and prep been going leading up to the fight? Has everything been going okay?
Yeah, everything's cool. I mean, my Orange County is only a 40-minute flight from Vegas.
Yeah.
So it's real easy for me. So, I mean, took a nap, got here, dealt with all the check-ins, and going to train right now and go hit up a buffet or something nice in a little bit.
And how's the weight going is it as well, mate?
Yeah, I'm coming in about 240 right now. So last fight I was a little bit heavy. I think I'm best at around 240 when I'm in shape and I can move. So I'm confident in my weight and in my and being in shape. So just feel happy where I'm at right now.
Did you just go old school and get the old kickboxing academy replicating Pat Barry's style? How were you training for this, and who were you training with?
You know, it's tough finding a guy like Pat Barry, you know, level as Pat Barry, and also the same height because he's a little bit shorter. But I did find some guys that fought in K-1 fights and some shorter boxers that throw you know big punches and I got to see that height. So I feel confident in my spine. Obviously, Pat Barry is going to be a very, very dangerous opponent. So I got to be smart and keep my hands up, like I said, and just take my time and relax.
And Shane, Pat Barry seems to get on with everyone in the heavyweight division. Have you any sort of relationship with Pat Barry?
We met a few years back. I was a sparring partner over at Brock Lesnar's camp when he was going to fight Cain Velasquez.
That clutch.
So we met out there and worked a little bit. A real nice guy. You know, we saw each other today and talked a little bit. You know, I think we're both kind of the same way. We're friends with all of our opponents or, you know, everyone in the industry. You know, obviously we're still going to fight and look to knock each other out, but at the end of the day, I'm friends with everybody.
Yeah.
Do you think that, like, Pat always sort of goes into his fights the same way. Do you reckon it's a psychological thing that Pat might implement into his game plan that he sort of gets on with the guys that he's fighting against?
Yeah, you know, I think I do the same thing, you know. Whenever I see the guy in the room, I'm the first one to go up and say hello, introduce myself, you know, just be a real nice guy. Obviously, in the cage, I mean, we're totally different. You know, it is business, and you get paid a lot more if you win. So it is, you are losing money if you're too nice, you know. So when it gets to the cage, we're both professional. We're going to go at it, you know. But when you're done, there's no reason to keep going with it, you know. I mean, fighting is what we do for a job, but it's not me as a person, you know. I'm looking to go out and have a good time and love life.
Yeah, Shane, narrative is always a big thing, and your last fight against Stipe, when you came up short, people wanted, they were telling the story of the accident and coming back and your rehab and how tough it was for you. How far do you feel you've come since then, and do you feel you're back to 100% now? You're the Shane Del Rosario of old.
Yeah, you know, I definitely, my camp and my training prior to that last fight, you know, I don't want to take anything away from Steve. He's a very tough opponent. And, you know, if we fight again, it will be another tough fight. But there's definitely, you know, days where I had to stop training entirely and just recover and see my physical therapist. And, you know, this camp, I didn't have any problems. I was able to train every day, all throughout my camp. So, that alone, shows that I'm a lot better and that I was able to run. My last fight, I didn't run once. This fight, I ran a bunch, was able to lift weights, do strength conditioning. So, you know, back to how I used to train for every one of my wins before.
What are you going to do to, Pat Barry this Saturday, Shane?
I was looking to finish, you know. I got to keep my hands up and move. We got to watch out for his big punches. You know, we're both going to look to knock each other out for sure.
And is it going to be a kickboxing match, or?
Yeah, I think so. Man, who knows? He might try to double leg me. Who knows? We'll have to see then. Maybe he's got a secret attack to wrestling.
Because Ariel Helwani asked Pat Barry during the week on the Mixed Martial Arts era, does he want to ever get back in a kickboxing match before the end of his career? And I was going, mate, are you serious? Like, these two guys are, like, you know, completely lined up for sure to be a kickboxing match. So hopefully we'll see that. And, mate, best.
Yeah, I think it will. I mean, it'll be an exciting fight. I mean, we're both heavyweights, so someone's going to get dropped.
Exactly.
And, it's not going to be me.
Awesome, mate. And obviously, we know you're good mates with Ian McCall. How excited is Ian about the fight against Joe Benavidez next February?
Yeah, he's really excited. He's already back to training really hard. You know, he obviously got dealt a bad hand on that draw out in Australia.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, it was a tough loss for him last time. But, you know, he's back on the training, working hard. You know, if he gets through this fight, I think he'll be back to where he was and can start getting towards that title again.
Awesome, Shane. Yeah. Listen, mate, would you like to say thanks to anyone, any sponsors, anything like that, or plug your
Twitter
handle or at before we let you go?
For sure. I just want to thank Metal Militia, Infinite Labs, Triumph United, Jason House, my manager, my team Oyama, and my strength conditioning place, Sports Science Lab.
Awesome, mate. Listen, best of luck the weekend, mate, and I really appreciate your time as always. And Shane, hope to talk to you again in the future,
appreciate
bro.
It, guys. I
gotta
get out to Dublin.
Yeah, mate, listen.
We're trying to get the UFC over here, but Dana says he's coming over 3 times this year.
Yeah, listen, mate, get yourself after you win this fight, get yourself on the Lona card and we'll chat to them.
I'll be out there 2013.
Definitely, get yourself on the Lona card. We'll fly over to London, man, and we'll be at that card anyway. Definitely 100% in the the press course. We'll chat to them, man. All right,
cool.
Thanks, William, bro. Best luck. Thank you, sir. Cheers, bye bye.
And we are back. That was Shane Del Rosario, who goes up against, as we said, Pat HD Barry next week. Thanks to me for Shane for his time. He was literally just off the plane when we got onto him from. He just landed in Vegas. So thanks to me to Shane
good
for
dude.
His time. Good fella. Obviously, stablemate of Uncle Creepy Ian McCall's at Oyama Gym. So thanks to him. And Mark. What way is that fight going to go?
I think Shane has a point to prove here.
I think this definitely
is him about laying it down. He wasn't really... it was Stipe last time, and he wasn't really up for that. I don't know.
I think it had a lot to do with his injury as well. He was obviously out with in a bad car accident before that. His back was really badly messed up. So I think he's had a little bit more time and a little bit, you know, to think about in the lead up to this fight. And he said he was working a lot of physio rehab still on the back. And, you know, he feels... like the Shane Del Rosario of old, so it's going to be very interesting. I actually fancy Shane too. I think Shane has a better chin than Pat Barry. We've seen Pat get knocked out on numerous occasions now, and we saw Shane, you know, he did take huge elbows against Stipe.
Yeah.
And you know, he hung in there for a while, and it was obviously stopped by the referee, but he's a good powerful dude. You know, he's never been knocked out in his career bar that TKO stoppage, but he's never actually been properly knocked out.
Mm.
So I expect Shane to win by KO. I think we can see you know, a pretty special head kick or something like this coming in, because they're both kickboxers.
Yeah, there's part of me that doesn't even care, because I just know what a fight it's going to be. I know what's going to happen. You can see it already that it's going to be probably a submission the first 30 seconds.
Yeah. It's a bit of a weird laugh.
No, I'm laughing. It's just putting the throat behind it.
Probably we haven't talked about it, actually. I think this is the reason why we haven't talked about it, because I really was bored.
Mike?
No, of the whole American TUF 16 this season. Really, obviously the ratings were the worst I've ever had. As I've said in the show, I did fancy Mike Ricci to win it outright, and I still will go with that.
He's been doing interviews for the last fucking 6 weeks. Like, you know,
come on with us.
Exactly. No, but like he's been out there in Canada talking about it, and I thought he should have been kept in a, like, you know, in a closet.
Yeah, and I resent the UFC for this and all this sort of talk out of him. Well, why did you go on the show, man? You knew it was going to be tough and hard. So, you know, you're getting an opportunity of a lifetime, exposure. And you know, you're getting exposure. You chose to be a mixed martial artist. No one forced you to go in there. So just shut up and fight, really, is what all I say. And he's facing Colton Smith, and Colton, you know, Colton isn't a, he's an impressive fighter. He's, you know, a grinder.
Yeah,
gets him to the ground. Great wrestling.
He's not the most technical.
Not
dude.
The most, but
he's a wrestler. He's a good wrestler.
He could cause Ricci problems if he does go in straight away. And I know we saw the knockout of Neil Magny, which was great. That Mike Ricci, you know, it was a fantastic knockout. But it stylistically is an it's an interesting match, because you could see Smith, if he does get takedowns and he puts him to the deck, you know, he could have Ricci in a bit of trouble. But the only thing that you say about Ricci's sort of all round game. That's, he's coming from TriStar Gym. You know, he's good everywhere. He's solid everywhere. I do fancy Ricci to win it.
Yeah, I think Colton's a good mediocre all round everything, but Ricci's good at everything.
Ricci's good at everything. Obviously, training with the likes of Rory McDonald and GSP at TriStar, and, you know, coached by Firas Zahabi.
Is he mates with Rory McDonald?
Oh, there.
If you saw that to the Fox.
Peter Parker,
yeah. They go shopping together in Montreal.
Yeah, it's a bit strange. Okay, but no, I do fancy Ricci to take that one down, and I'm really looking forward to that card.
How do you see it finishing? Just take him down, grind him.
A decision for me.
I think he's going to knock him out. I don't know why.
You could well be right. I think Colton's sort of
he's a bit of a creative fighter. You know, he's a good fighter.
I think he'll hang
really
on. I think he'll hang on in there, Colton. And I think it is going to go to decision. But now I'm really looking forward to it. Has to see Mohawk fellow. What's his name?
Julian. It's really disheartening when he's the reason that the entire show does good ratings, when everyone tunes in to hear his little rants throw down. And
Dane obviously criticised the guys on the card as well, saying you know, you need to step up your performances. And I think it's shown that this is the only fight that features fighters from the TUF 16. No one else is on the card by these two guys
until the last episode with Ricci knocking out Magny, I think it was. Until that, Manny was the only knockout in the entire series. Yeah. Every other fight went to
distance. I like Neil Magny. He's a good fighter. Yeah. I think he'll be back. I think he'll be signed by the UFC. I do like him as a fighter.
Well, he jumped on it. It was a scary knockout where he actually almost attacked Mazzagatti at the end of it after the knockout. And he was just in La La Land. But there's no one in that who's going to come out a star other than if Julian gets a fucking contract.
No,
he'll find himself in a crazy promotion in the desert somewhere. I don't know where he'll be, but
I wouldn't expect him to get a contract.
Yeah, what do you think of the entire season?
You should be on each one ad for headaches tablets, because you gave me an awful headache during that series. But listen, just guys, check out this. It's a fantastic card, and obviously on the card we have Melvin Guillard and Varner, as we've talked about. I'm really looking forward to that one, and you know, sure to be a fight of the night contender. And we caught up with Melvin Guillard earlier on today actually, and Melvin was good enough to give us about 15 minutes of his time and just talked about the fight, everything, and his new found friendship with Ricky Fowler, the unbelievably talented US golfer. So check out this interview, and we'll chat to you in a few minutes, guys. Cheers.
This is Chad the Savage George, and you're listening to Talking Brawl.
Delighted to say we're joined on the line by Melvin, the young assassin Guillard, who goes up against Jamie Varner this weekend at the TUF 16 finale in Las Vegas, Nevada. Melvin, thanks a million for your time, mate. How are things? How are you keeping?
Everything's going great, man. Just resting up, you know, monitoring my weight cut. That's about it, you know, just the normal things that I do during fight week, you know, nothing changes.
Yeah, great stuff. Have you much weight to cut, Melvin, ahead of the fight?
I just only have like about 8 to 10 more to go. I'm not that heavy. I came in pretty light. I came in at 170. So, you know, it's been good. I woke up this morning and I was only 65. So, right now my weight's fine.
Okay, excellent. Who have you been working with ahead of the camp? Obviously, I think you've joined, obviously, Black Zillions. How's that been going? How's that experience been going?
Oh, man, you know, being with the Black Zillions has been interesting. You know, it's been great. You know, in the beginning, it had a little rocky start, you know, getting guys, you know, together and everybody focused. But, you know, we have our solid team now. You know, we have a couple of world champions fighters on there already, you know, and then our teammate Abel Trujillo, you know, he put on a great performance last weekend in Seattle. So, you know, right now the team is coming off of, you know, we have all the momentum right now in our court, and, you know, I just want to keep that good momentum going and go out Saturday night and beat Jamie Varner in an impressive fashion.
Yeah, Melvin, it's been a big change for you. It's almost been moving families, because you've had so much success in New Mexico with Team Jackson. Winklejohn, this Black Zillions team, it really seems to have come together over the last year or two. And do you feel now you're really an integral part of it?
Well, I mean, you know, I think the biggest key to why the Black Zillions have come together so strong, and the backbone and the brains of operation is Glenn Roberts. You know, we have a very, very good management team with ASM, and, you know, my manager, Glenn, you know, he put a lot of time and money. He put a lot of money and time into this organization, you know, to build a strong team. And right now it's finally starting to pay off. You know, it's been a long year. It's been a long process. You know, a lot of things, you know, the media and fans haven't been able to see, but, you know, it's been a challenging process. And right now everybody's mind and focus is on becoming world champions and, you know, being that dominant team like the Militias were, and, you know, and a lot of these big camps like the Lion Den back in the day. So, you know, we want to send a message to all the other camps out there, other fighters, that, you know, be careful what you wish for when you sign a contract to fight the Black Series.
Do you feel that now you're getting the attention you deserve? Because you spoke in Jackson's that it was possibly hard to get the treatment that you needed and the focus on you as a fighter. Do you feel that in the Black Series they're nurturing you as a fighter, and you can get the focus coming up to a fight from the top coaches?
Well, I think the biggest problem that happened with being at Jackson's was, you know, the fame started to come, you know, with the coaches, you know, Coach Winklejohn. Know, at one point he didn't really care about cameras, and then somewhere in there he started, you know, being this Hollywood coach who wanted the cameras, who wanted the notoriety. And, you know, that's where things started to go a little sour. You know, but I still left there in good terms. You know, I have no regrets. I have no animosity with the coaches there. I still love those coaches as if they were still coaching me. You know, and you know, at the Black Zillions, the difference is, you know, we train as one, it's almost like a military vibe, you know. It's almost like having a SEAL team. You know, we train as one unit. We function as one unit. You know, all the coaches support each guy the same exact way. No guy gets more treatment or more special treatment than the next. You know, Alistair Overeem, Rashad Evans, they're no different than any other guy in the gym. Everybody gets the same treatment from all the coaches. And I think that's where the positive reinforcement comes in, because, you know, now we have guys like Abel Trujillo, Michael Johnson, myself, you know, up and comers who are still fighting to get to that title belt, that we get the same vibe and feeling as the guys like Alistair, Vito Belfort, Rashad Evans. You know, we have a lot of big names in the gym, but all those guys also look up to us younger guys the same way we look up to them. And I think that's the biggest asset that we have as a team, and the function that we have with the Black Zillions.
Obviously, Melvin, last time out, you fought your good friend, Donald Cerrone. It was your first KO of your career. It was a great fight, very exciting fight. How does that feel going into the fight now? Did you learn a lot from that experience of being KO'd for the first time?
Yeah, I learned when you got somebody on their heels on the fence, you finish them. And I also learned to keep your hands up at all times, you know. So it was a life lesson, you know, and I took it hard for a couple of weeks, but, you know, I bounced back. And, you know, like I told the other people that interviewed me not long ago, you know, fights like this are the fights I wake up for. You know, I'm coming off a loss, you know, and I want to be, I not only want to win, but I want to win impressively, you know, because I like not only wowing the judges and the fans, but I like from the owners of the company to be like, damn, this kid, you know, really brings it. And that's what I want to do. You know, I'm here to fight, but I'm not here just to seek out a win, you know, and edge out a win, you know, a controversial win. I'm here to finish guys and put guys away. And that's the way I fought my whole career, and that's the way I'm going to continue to fight until I retire.
Definitely, man. You're a very exciting fighter, and we love watching you here at Talking Brawls. Melvin, how was your relationship with Donald after the fight? I know you were good buddies going into it.
We still good boys.
Still good mates.
I mean, we still talk to each other every once in a while, and, you know, he's doing great. He's up in Denver now. You know, we nothing changed, you know what I'm saying? If not, you know, it probably made us a lot closer. But I've always had a very private relationship with Donald, you know, my wife and him, and, you know, we go up to his ranch and hang out and stay the weekends and stuff. So nothing changed there, you know what I mean? Our friendship is still strong. Our bond is still strong. But that little sucker does owe me a fight in New Orleans. When it's time for me to have my fight in my hometown, he owes me a redo, so he's already aware of that. But, you know, me and Donald are going to always be great friends. Fighting each other, it only makes us stronger. It's like fighting your brother, you know. You fight your brother, you scrap and dap, you hug, you know, and at the same time, we both going to make a
a lot of money every time we fight each other because, you know, a matchup like me and him always going to have fight of the night written all over it.
Yeah. Melvin, your life has almost been, it's gone in line with the success and the rise of the UFC. You were in the Ultimate Fighter 2, and you've had a lot of trials and tribulations, but you've always taken any fight that's been put in front of you, and that's always been a successful way of your fighting style. How do you feel, who is Melvin Guillard the fighter and the person now? Is he more comfortable and confident where he is in his career now? You had a few losses this year, but you had 7 wins up coming before the Lozon fight. Where is Melvin now in his career, and how far are you away from that title shot?
You know, if I had to speak on my career, you know, I've had, like you said, a lot of success. I've also had a lot of setbacks. And, you know, right now I just feel, you know, I feel free. I feel alive. You know, I feel like I'm having fun again. You know,
yeah.
For a while when I started, you know, getting close to that title around the time I fought Lozon, you know, I started losing focus of, you know, the fun. You know, it was, oh yeah, all right, let's win this fight so I can get that title. And, you know, the more and more I sit back and watch guys that win the title, you know, I'm starting to notice when they lose it, it's like they fighting back so hard to try to get it back. And when it don't work, they switch weight classes and they try to do better at a lower weight class. And then if that don't work, next thing you know, they pretty much, you know, exiled because you can't go back to fighting the guys that come off the Ultimate Fighter, you know, the recent shows. You can't go back to fighting guys that's getting a welcome into the UFC because you're now known as a former champion elite fighter. So all you can do is wait to fight the elite guys. And if you don't bounce back quick enough to win over some of the elite guys, you end up still in the back of the pack. So right now I think I'm in a really, really good, comfortable spot in my career where, you know, I can win the fights I need to win. You know, I want to be successful, but I'm not chasing the title because, you know, I like fighting, you know, some of the newcomers and welcome them into the UFC. You know, a lot of my fights have been newcomers, you know, and they've been tough fights. You know, they're not easy fights, but it leaves me a position to where I can negotiate a fair fight, you know, and I can fight on certain cards that some of the cards that you know, like guys like Frankie Edgar can't fight on anymore because he's still a former champion elite guy. So I think right now where I'm at in my career, I'm in a pretty comfortable position, you know, to fight some great fight and, you know, fight on more shows than often. You know, some guys only fight twice a year. This year I'm actually being able to fight 4 times a year, and that's a blessing.
And speaking of Joe Lozon, he's coming off obviously a victory over your opponent this Saturday, Jamie Varner. What have you prepared for Varner this weekend? Is there anything you've been working on in Black Zillions ahead of the fight?
Man, you know what, I focus and work on everything that I need to do to get better, and you know, the first thing has been my jiu-jitsu. I'm very proud of where I'm at right now with my jiu-jitsu. Still currently a blue belt, but I'm already submitting purple belts in class. I'm doing a lot of Naga tournament. I'm doing gi and no gi. Jeez. And I have full Abu Dhabi world champion coaches in the room training me every day. I'm doing gi and no gi every day a week. So, you know, I'm definitely comfortable wherever this fight lands, but I don't go into a fight worrying about what his strengths are. I focus on what my strengths are, and I want to impose my will, and I want to be the guy that's imposing his will. I don't sit back and on my heels and wait for guys to come to me. I go to them. And I think that's what makes this fight a stylistic good matchup, because Jamie Varner tends to be the same way. He comes at you, he don't wait.
Yeah.
So I think we're just going to probably, it's going to end up, we're going to be in the middle and one of us is going to get knocked out and it's not going to be me.
It's fight of the night written all over it, mate, anyway, I think personally. And what way is the fight going to go, as you said there? Do you think it's going to be a knockout finish?
Well, I'm always looking for a knockout. You know me, that's the way I fight. I fight to finish. I think I'm going to call second round TKO. I mean, I'm going to feel him out a little bit in the first round and see where it goes, but I'm going to keep the pressure and I'm going to look for him to come to me and, you know, look for a knockout somewhere in the second round. But if it goes 3 rounds, you know, I'm definitely in cardiovascular shape to go 3 rounds if I have to. So I'm ready for a war with Varner. You know, Varner is one of those guys you have to respect as a striker. You know, when you're a fellow striker, you know, you know, he's an exciting fight. You know, I like to watch him fight, especially when he's, you know, growing up watching him fight other guys. You know, he's a guy that comes and he brings it and he showcases his skills very well. And I'm the same way. And I think right now, you know, it's an honor and a pleasure to fight a guy with such tenacity as Jamie Varner. You know, he's not a guy that's going to lay down and let you win. You got to go in and beat him. And I plan on doing that.
Amazing, Melvin. That's brilliant. Any plugs to make and to anyone you'd like to thank and homage to Twitter?
You know, it's simple, man. It's just, I just want to thank thank the fans, my team, the Black Zillions, my management company, ASM, and Glenn Robinson and Frank Smith, you know, for all the hard work that they do to prepare me physically and mentally before these fights. And and then to my family and friends, man, for everybody that's always supported me, no matter what the outcome of the fights has been and no matter what ups and downs I've had in my career. And I want to thank a newfound friend of mine, Ricky Fowler, who I play a lot of golf, and I've been hanging out with Ricky, and I got to see him play the Franklin Templeton shootout last week, and I just want to send a good luck shout out to him, the upcoming season that's getting ready to start in January, and hopefully he can win a couple more majors.
I was just actually about to ask you that, because I saw on your Twitter page, I'm a big golf fan myself, and I saw the picture with Ricky Fowler. How did that relationship come about? Because it's a bit strange.
It's weird, man. My buddy Ryan Loco, he works for ASM, for my management company. He's our team photographer, and he grew up with Ricky and Ricky's caddy, John. Yeah. They all grew up together on the West Coast, so he always told me he knew him, but you know, I'm one of those guys, like, you know, I don't really believe you until I see it. And this past weekend he had some passes for us to go out to Naples, Florida, and we drove an hour and a half to go watch Ricky play. And you know, after that we went to lunch, and you know, it's funny, they knew quite a bit about myself, you know, and it was kind of surreal, you know. I was starstruck at the same time, and you know, and I kept bringing up golf talk, and I didn't want to. It's like somebody talking about fighting with me, you know, you just don't want to talk about fighting. But I didn't know what else to talk about, and I got all excited, and it worked out great, man. And you know, he hooked me up with a bunch of free Puma gear and stuff like that. But he's a great guy, man. He's a great guy and good person to know. And he's young and successful, you know. And I've been very young and very successful in my early days of fighting. So you know, we have a lot in common.
Brilliant stuff, Melvin. Listen, mate, thanks a million for your time, and best of luck this weekend against Jamie Varner.
I appreciate you guys' time. Thanks again for the interview.
And we are back. Thanks a million to Melvin Guillard for his time. Really looking forward to that fight, I have to say. It's going to be a barn burner, as we like to use.
Yeah, I think that was one of those fights that when it was announced, you just kind of go, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It was like Joe Lowe's on one last time. Joe Lowe's on and Jamie Varner. Some of those are, yeah, looking forward to that one. So really looking forward to that.
It's always a tricky one. Jamie's one of those ones. It's a dangerous fight to take, because Jamie's...
You know what you're going to get.
Yeah. Well, I suppose Jamie's reaffirmed his place after...
He's reestablished himself since coming over from WC. Really looking forward to it.
Good.
We learned today that Mark the Machine Hominick, a good friend of the show, we've had Mark on a couple of times here. I'd like to thank Mark. He mentioned a few weeks ago, obviously after his fight against Pablo Garza, you know, a real ambassador for the sport of mixed martial arts, and a real credit to himself. He's always conducted himself in an absolute gentlemanly manner, and Mark has announced his retirement. So listen, best wishes to Mark, and thanks a million for his time, and hope nothing but good things come from Mark in the future. Ash Adrenaline MMA and Team Tompkins, because I am sure he's going to be running the gym there now on a full time basis. So
yeah, I think he wants to be an ambassador for the sport, and I think that's what he's going
to
be.
He is. He's a credit to himself, and listen, best wishes to Mark.
He'd be remembered in the right way. He doesn't want to let himself down.
Exactly. He's a very honourable guy, so I think that has something to do with it. He obviously had a huge talk with his family and stuff, and then last night. So listen,
I said that to you actually when it happened. Anyone else? MMA retirements happen every single day, and most of them you just kind of, like Nick Diaz is still pretend retired. Yeah. But when Mark Hominick says it, you kind of go, guy of that integrity, you kind of go, oh shit, he means it.
He means it. He's a good dude. So best wishes to Mark.
Yeah. Well, I suppose this weekend's going to be crazy and stacked, but we caught up with an old friend of the show to talk about
George.
The super success of his film, because it's been crazy. Netflix has been taken by storm by the Occupation Fighter. It's a million downloads. A million buys on Netflix in the last week and a half or so.
It's going on Netflix. It's crazy. But you know, it was one of the top five documentaries when it was released on iTunes last summer, and it's just gone from strength to strength. And you know, check it out, guys. It's fucking awesome.
It's not even just a niche thing anymore. It's a good movie. It's one of those things that anyone if you want something to show someone and go, this is MMA, this is what the pay per view we're buying is. Yeah. It's a good thing. It's a good reflection on what fighters do every day.
I think it's a must see documentary for everyone, for anyone, any walk of life. It's an absolute cracker. It's up there at my favourite talk, and obviously the one I really like about Rad Martinez as well, his life.
That was unbelievable. You showed me that yesterday for the first time.
Yeah, you can watch it on YouTube. It's fantastic. Check that one out as well, guys. And you know, Chad's a good dude as well, and obviously really looking forward to seeing Chad fight again.
Yeah, damn right. We go to the interview.
Why not?
As well.
Okay, guys, we caught up with Chad Savage George. We'll catch you in a few minutes, guys. Check out the interview.
Hey everyone, this is the Big Wheel, Sean Wheelock, the play-by-play television commentator for Bellator, and you are listening to Talking Brawls.
delighted to say we're joined on the line again by Chad George, the star of Occupation Fighter. And I believe, Chad, Netflix, it's gone on Netflix by storm. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. It's gone crazy on Netflix.
And what's it been like, this online revolution? The fans have really come out to support you. Via social media, everyone seems to have joined up behind the Occupation Fighter bandwagon. How have you felt the support behind you, and what has it meant to you as a fighter and as the person behind the documentary?
You know, it's really incredible, just to be honest. I would have never expected anybody to have reached out as much as they have. I mean, you know, one or two people, you know, would have been like, you know, it was an okay movie. But the amount of people that have actually, like, went out of the way to contact me and just tell me that they're so thankful for my story and it's helping with them, and now they're supporting my career and all this stuff, it's incredible. I couldn't have wished for this in a million years, and it's turned out to be this amazing process. And it's great.
You talked before to us about what the story you wanted to tell was, and you weren't expecting to touch as many people. But have people been inspired to change their lives because of the movie? And have you seen it changing other people's lives as time has gone on?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if I've seen a change in other people's lives, but I've had a lot of people tell me that the story and my struggles have really helped them believe in themselves and push further for them to want to do things. I've also had people send me letters saying, you know, that they thought they had quit something before, and then my story helped them to realize that that's when they should kind of keep going. And to me, like, it makes me almost emotional thinking about it, because, like, I'm just a regular guy.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just a guy who just didn't want to give up.
What's it like to want to write the next chapter of that book, to write the perfect ending to it? And you're looking for that fight now. You're trying to get back for and recoup at the back. And how's the rehab going with it? I know you've had a lot of problems with that in the past.
Well, you know, the rehab's actually going incredible. This week is the first week that I've been able to walk normal, I'd say, in the last 6 weeks, but maybe even longer than that. But I've been having the back problems for about 3 years now. We've been shooting cortisone in it, and, you know, just to get through the fight. You know, I haven't been able to actually train 100% properly for, you know, the most important fight in my career.
Jeez.
And now, you know, we've just been trying to do things to get it to where it needs to be so I can get back in there. And, you know, we actually made a very big decision today that my goal is by mid-2013, I will, through hell or high water, be fighting in the UFC. That's the goal. Ooh. And in order for me to do that, I have to be healthy. I have to be 100%. I have to be able to have full confidence in the way I can train and my capabilities. So in order to do that, we decided that we are going to move forward and most likely do the back surgery to get my back finally taken care of and I can get back on the grind.
And Chad, what kind of back surgery are you going to have?
It's actually a minimal surgery. They're going to go in and do a... it's just a microscopic surgery, so they go in there, make a small incision, and they're going to remove the piece of disc that is herniated.
Yeah.
For those that don't know, it's actually a 2-centimeter herniation, so it's like 20 millimeters. It's actually a very large herniation that a lot of doctors are blown away that I'm even able to function, and then the fact that I just won the Jiu-Jitsu World titles with it, it's amazing in itself.
And I actually tweeted you when you won the Nogi World title. How good was that to do that? And how proud of yourself were you to actually come out with gold?
You know, winning a Jiu-Jitsu World title is amazing. And, you know, the thing going into it was I didn't know how I was going to perform because I didn't know how my leg and my back was going to act up, because leading into it the night before, I couldn't even put socks on. So, you know, it was one of those things, like, we had to go, okay, make sure we're warmed up. Hey, we go in there and, you know, cross our fingers and hope for the best that my leg's going to be good. And it was just that. I went in there and whether it was adrenaline or excitement or whatever it was, it took over and we had a great performance and came out on top.
So you clearly put your socks on the right way that day when it God, man, that's unbelievable. Was it that bad, the pain in the back?
It was really bad. It was really bad. You know, I couldn't sit up straight. Laying in bed, you know, it was a chore. I can't get good nights of sleep. And then, you know, being the men we are, you know, I live with my girlfriend, and, you know, she's like, well, do you want me to help you? And I'm like, no. In my head, I'm just thinking, like, come on, just put my socks on for me. But, you know, I won't show that to her.
Chad, how hard is it? Was this a real decision to make? And it's almost a long-termist view on your career that you want to get back and get this fixed for good. And is it hard when you go to the doctor? Do doctors tell you that this surgery was required, or you can struggle on and keep on getting the shots and you can fight through it? Was it a personal choice, or were the doctors edging you to get this surgery all the time?
You know, it's a little bit of both, actually. I've seen about 4 to 6 different people about my back, you know, and to just to get as many opinions as possible.
Yeah.
And now I'm working with a great doctor, Dr. William Kessler at the OC Fight Docs out here, which I actually have to travel quite a ways to go see, but he's worked with a lot of great fighters, done a lot of great things for them, and this is, you know, I think he's going to be the man that I'm going to be working with besides him and Dr. David Reed, who I've been with for a long time that you saw in the documentary, that... Yeah. You know, my team that I have behind me for my rehab and my rehabilitation, I'm fully confident in with what they think is best, and I'm going to run with it. And this is the route that we're going, and I'm looking to make a strong comeback and have at it.
And what would the doctors estimated a kind of a rehab time and when you're looking to go under the knife with this?
Well, yeah, actually, they say it's a very non-invasive surgery. So,
brilliant.
We're hoping to do the surgery, if it goes that route, before the end of the year.
Fantastic.
We're just going to rush into it. And then they're saying, you know, I could be up and full kicking in 4 to 6 weeks.
Chad, how many people have seen Occupation Fighter now via Netflix and
millions,
just worldwide? Have you got an estimation?
Well, we have an estimation. Like, you know, we don't know the exact numbers. We know what the math is. And the way they say it is that usually about 1 in every 100 people that have seen it on Netflix will leave a rating.
Yeah.
As of today, keep in mind, it's only been on Netflix for just over 3 weeks. There's over 11,000 ratings.
Jeez.
On Netflix already.
11,000?
11,000 ratings on Netflix already.
Well, listen, mate, you know what we think of it. We absolutely love the documentary, and I advise everyone to get because it's the way we want to promote mixed martial arts, obviously, in this country and in the UK and Europe. It's absolutely incredible. But getting back to your evolution as a fighter, and getting back to, obviously, you talked the last time about Alex Soto. It was pretty close between yourself and him, who was going to get possibly signed up. How are you going to get back to the UFC, and what's the road? You haven't fought in so long as well, Chad, so what's next for you? Is it the UFC fight, or is it a couple of fights beforehand?
You know, I know what I'm going to have to do. I know I am going to have to at least get one more, you know, on the local shows before the UFC wants me, because of the fact, you know, they're not going to pick somebody up coming off of a loss.
But
I do believe that if I come back into the game fully ready to go, and make a dominant performance, and then with the support of people from around the world that are supporting me through the film,
exactly,
I think the UFC has to bring me in. You know, they can't deny not only what I deserve, but what the people around the world deserve by, you know, their support. And me getting in there is not just for me, it's for everybody that's been behind it.
What's your motivation as a fighter to go to the UFC now? What do you feel you have something to prove to yourself or the people, or what's your motivation? What are you fighting for now at the moment?
You know what? It's funny. That's always been the ongoing battle between, you know, somebody's inner ego. You know, what am I doing this for? Who am I doing this for?
Yeah.
And for the first time in my life, I can honestly say, I am doing this for me.
You
know, like, I'm ready to be in that stage, and that's where I belong. You know, I don't belong fighting on these smaller shows or any of those promotions. I belong in that octagon, fighting the best guys in the world, and showing that I am living proof that if you believe in something strong enough, anything is possible.
Absolutely, Brent. Chad, the last time you were on the show with us, you didn't really know how to answer that question. Has a lot changed since then?
I think not a lot's changed. More clarity has come in. I think that's the best thing that I could say. I know what I want, and I know what I need to do to get it.
And do you know who you want when you get into the UFC?
It doesn't matter.
Sure, we'd like to know anyway. Go on. Fill us in, Chad. Come on, brother.
No, you know, it's getting there is the first step.
Of course.
Once you're
there,
you know, you're going to be fighting one of the top guys in the world regardless. And, you know, I've fought the top guys in the world, so I don't care who it is. It's not going to be anything new.
And Chad, what's your whole opinion on the merger of Strikeforce and UFC? Obviously, it's going to happen now after January. Does that make your position harder to get into the UFC than it might have been?
Because you got to realize, it doesn't really really make that big of a difference because Strikeforce never had the bantamweight division.
That's true.
So it really didn't make any difference. You know, the only competitor show now is Bellator. Now, you know, when they make their statement in 2013 with Spike and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like a catch-22 because if you sign to Bellator, you're no longer, you know, having any chances of getting in the UFC. So, you know, it's you got to pick your poison.
Do you study it closely, Chad, when you're, if you're not fighting and just think of how you're going to get there? Are you still like a big fan of all the promotions? Do you watch everything that's going on, even when you're not fighting?
I just haven't had much time.
Yeah.
You know, now that I'm spending a lot of time coaching. That's one thing that's changed since the last time we talked.
Yeah.
I'm coaching a lot now. I've got amateurs that I'm working with. I have my pros that I'm working with. So I'm always running and doing these things. So I really haven't had too much time to watch a lot of the fights. But I still really enjoy it. And, you know, yeah. I mean, I don't know if that's about that.
Yeah, the gym seems to be doing great.
Yeah,
and have you found you're doing a lot more coaching since the success of the film?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if it's the success of the film that the coaching's helped out, but that was kind of more of a choice that I personally made.
Yeah.
I decided that I wanted to start working with my amateurs of the gym. I decided I started want to work with my pros, and you know they believe in me as well, so it goes really well. One thing with the gym though, we've been getting a lot of phone calls and people coming into the gym because of the film. So that's kind of cool too.
Awesome, Chad. But just before we wrap it up, Chad, where will we see you in say 12 months' time? Where's Chad George going to be, and what's Chad George going to do in the mixed martial arts world?
I don't where I'm going to be, but you will know that I will be the best Chad George you have seen yet. Healthy, ready to go, mentally ready, and if all goes well, there'll be 8 sides to where I'm standing.
Absolutely fantastic.
Chad, where can people go to get Occupation Fighter, and how can they find you?
Occupation Fighter is still available on everywhere, on Video On Demand, iTunes, now on Netflix. It's also one of the new most popular documentaries on Netflix. So go there, rate it, leave some comments, remarks. You can always catch me on Facebook, on Twitter, Savage135. And I'm out there. Let the UFC know that you want to see me there.
We do. Right. We do.
You know, let's get there.
The revolution.
100%. Listen, mate, you're an absolute gentleman. And guys, I'd advise everyone to pick up Occupation Fighter. It's one of the best documentaries I've ever watched in my life.
Yeah.
Documentary, full stop. Not even sports documentary. Chad, thanks so much for coming on, and we'll hope to talk to you again very soon in the future.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me. Always great talking to you.
That's absolute gentleman. Thanks, mate. Booyakasha, we are back.
Fuck.
Thanks a million to Chad George again for his time. And check out Occupation Fighter. I'm sure we'll hear from Chad in the very near future again on Talking Brawls. And you can catch us on Talking Brawls if you want to get in contact with us, or follow us, hit us up on Twitter or anything like that. You can get us at Twitter at Talking Brawls. And if you want to get in direct contact with Mark or myself, you can hit us up an email, talkingbrawls@gmail.com. And on Facebook, you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/talkingbrawls mixed martial arts podcast. And if you want to follow up myself and Mark, you can find Mark Moriarty at markmoriarty101.
And he's at nomagra4.
Oh, yeah. So, thanks a million to Chad, guys. Really, I urge everyone to check that out. Regardless, if you're just a casual mixed martial arts fan, if you're not a mixed martial arts fan, just anyone and everyone
want something to show your dad
should check out this documentary. Buy it on iTunes for a Christmas present or something like that. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Or catch it on Netflix. Just do it, guys. Absolutely fantastic. And guys, obviously we'll hit up the competition again. Obviously we've tickets to give away. The good folk at Cage Warriors have given us a pair of tickets for Cage Warriors 51 in the Helix in Dublin on New Year's Eve. And all you have to do is follow us on Twitter, and you have to hashtag Talking Brawl CWFC51. We'll be putting up also a tweet tomorrow that you have to retweet as well. So we will be announcing the winner on next week's podcast.
And basically just retweet and share as much. And the more we see you, the more likely you are getting the tickets.
Yeah. Retweet or just get involved with us. And speaking of Cage Warriors, Paul McVey, obviously we show on the show last week, ended his 8 straight wins in the Cage Warriors banner with a unanimous decision loss to Brandon Hempelman.
It was unfortunate. I think he just came up short in the night. It was still a good fight.
Yeah, no, it was entertaining.
It was a top card. I thought that Paul, I don't know if he, I wouldn't say he came in just looking a bit out of shape, but it was a tough fight for him, and it was 30-20 30-27, 30-27, 30-27. It's a tough scoring.
He lost every round, but, you know, Hempelman's a young dude. Paul's obviously coming to the latter part of his career. So, listen, best wishes for Paul anyway. And what other fight stood out for you in the card?
Well, Owen Roddy was his defeat to, his name was Wilson Riche. I hadn't heard much of him beforehand. Yeah. I didn't know much about him, but it was by submission.
What a gutsy dude, man. Roddy is. Remember that rear naked choke? He held on for so long, man. Towards the end of that. I think it was the second round.
Guy had Roddy picked for that, and I was just, you know when Hart rules head?
Yeah.
I really thought he had it in the bag, and he did hold on, but, yeah. What did you think? Did you think it was a good card?
Yeah, no, really enjoyed it. I think the best card they're going to have this year is the New Year's Eve one. It's stacked top to bottom.
I kind of thought it was the builder for that one. It was kind of, they're holding a lot of their big guns for it, and I thought,
Look, there's two world titles on the line in December 31st.
And Chris Fields has been announced now, and that's going to be fucking huge.
Looking forward to that one, looking forward against Jesse Taylor, who holds notable victories actually over Chris Camozzi, former UFC fighter. And there was another name in there I saw, but yeah, no, it's I really can't wait for that fight. It's really going to be a good one. And Cage Warriors is going from strength to strength. Yeah, and Owen Roddy's actually on the card again as well. It's a strange one.
Fighting very soon after.
He's in the prelims with Philip Mulpeter.
Yeah.
And obviously the main card we're going to have Ash Daly against the Finnish girl Katja. I can't pronounce her name. Capita or something. It's something like, sorry, I'm very ignorant.
Don't worry, it's cool. Our ignorance is on names. We're just bad with pronunciation.
We've Chris and then Connor against Ivan Bichinger, which is it's going to be a crazy night.
It's
going to
be rocking.
And tickets are actually cage side tickets are sold out.
Yeah.
And the event, I believe, is very close to selling out. So get involved.
It went on sale the other day as well.
Last Thursday. So get involved with our competition, guys. It could be your only chance of getting tickets by now. You know, as far as we know, it could be sold out.
When you listen to us from beyond the grave.
That's it. So listen, we'll be announcing the winner next week's show. So as we said, get involved and hit that shit up. Cage Warriors is the best shizzle in Europe for mixed martial arts.
Damn right.
So just get involved.
Get involved.
Get involved.
The Cage Warriors Talking Bros bandwagon.
That's it. So, Mark. Oh, there's loads of stuff we could talk about all night, Mark.
I was thinking. We had a messy one. We finished the interviews last night, and we finished about half one. No, we finished about half
later,
two.
Half two it was.
And we were kind of going, oh, fuck, we need a drink, because we were working hard.
Yeah.
We were in here from fucking seven till about half two.
Yeah, so.
And we were having one of those nights where we were banging our head against the wall, going, oh my god, we have to talk MMA for fucking hours.
Yeah, and we loved doing it, but it was just
Jesus Christ. Woke up the morning. Oh Jesus!
So I woke up this afternoon at 4 o'clock.
Oh man,
I don't know. It was that hungover.
Well, look. Okay, peeling back the curtain. Just one word, which is synonymous with pain in the fucking head, is coppers. And Jesus Christ, never post interview coppers. It's always a mistake.
I might have to go out again tonight as well.
Oh man,
for my troubles.
You're a fighter, dude.
I'm a fighter. Yes,
this is the fight finder. You know, kind of will he be KO'd tonight? You know?
That's it, guys. But I don't think we've had any more news. Just check out the cards this weekend. Obviously, the smashes, and then we have the UFC 16 finale.
It's pretty much going to be an entire weekend, like two cards back to back, two stacked cards. It's like, I think they're getting everyone out. It's a big end of the year from the UFC, from mixed martial arts in general.
UFC, Cage Warriors, Dream, really in a promotion.
Yeah.
All at the end of December, so I fucking can't wait.
We're going to be dead by the end of this. This is going to be fucking mad.
No, the UFC card in December is awesome. It's looking really good. Look, we've, Yushin Akami against Belcher, Chris Lieben against Fimola.
And Chris Lieben now looking in shape and back to, he's looking better than ever. So what am I talking about?
Yeah, unbelievable.
It's not a BJ Penn. This guy, he's got abs for the first time again. He's back in shape.
So it's bound to be a crazy end to the year in the world of mixed martial arts. Highlights of the last week in mixed martial arts.
Yeah.
Matt Brown. I have to say, Matt Brown or the Owen Roddy fight.
Yeah.
Or I'll go Abel Trujillo. Cruikshank's head kick as well.
And John Albert getting the 60K as well.
The prelims as well. Really, yeah. I was really just...
I only caught the Nam Phan fight, and then I kind of had to go into town, and I was all pissed off.
I watched every single fight,
and I was trying to catch it on the rebound. And that's something which I'd like to complain about is the fact that it actually cut off at the end. It ran a bit long, so if you'd Sky Plus or kind of if you'd put it on the record, it actually cut off midway through the Benson Henderson Nate Diaz fight.
So I watched the cards about three times after, and the same thing happened. I didn't realise at the time when I was watching it live.
Did you hear Ben's? I was actually lucky that it got cut off in the sense that did you hear him trying to get the amen?
Yeah. Oh God.
Ah!
Yeah. No. It's gone over the top with all this God thing. You know, it's just stop forcing your beliefs.
God's good and everything, but like people. We need to know.
Fucking just stop. So guys, obviously as we said, you can hit us up if you want to get in direct contact. We can catch us at Talking Brawls, at Mark Moriarty 101, at Niall McGrath 4, all on Twitter, obviously on Facebook as well, Talking Brawls Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. You can hit us up, and if you want to get in direct contact with us, get on contact with us, Gmail, talkingbrawls@gmail.com. listen, get involved in the competition. We're going to wrap up the show now in a minute, and it's been another crazy week and another crazy week to come next week, and we'll be back with more top guests. We will love yous and leave yous.
And this show for Mark Hominick.
Yeah,
what Mark, a career, what a guy.
Big shout out to Mark Hominick. Actually, we'll dedicate this one to Mark Hominick on an absolutely fantastic career and an absolute gentleman and top ambassador for the sport of mixed martial arts. Okay, guys, time to say goodbye. Good luck and good night from Mark Moriarty and myself, Niall McGrath. Catch you next week. Cheers.